Baron felt he should be doing something with his charges, but he couldn't figure out what. If he took them out in the street to head for the port, they could be shot. If he kept them here, they were sitting ducks.
Serrano, taxi's here. Room for 15.
That simplified things, slightly.
Hazel, Professor, take the Elias Madero children, the babies, and, let's see.
Room for 15 adults. Make that 2 adults, 4 small children, and surely he could cram in 10 babies. No, another adult and 10 babies.
Prima, bring 8 more babies if you have them, and a reliable woman to take care of them.
That turned out to be a gray-haired woman as wrinkled as dried fruit. In less than 3 minutes, he had 10 babies, the 4 little children, and the adults, all out the door and into the first ground transport vehicle. Baron looked up the street, to the flower-decked park at the end of it. In the middle, a great stone star shape. The points of the star were blunted, he noted, and seemed to have bronze plaques set on them. Suddenly, as he watched, a door opened across the street, and a woman scampered toward him, eyes on the ground. When she neared him, she stopped short.
Come on!
The woman dashed on, brushed past him.
And Travis's little brother, he took in this key and he put it into this thing, this box thing. And then Travis's prima, she whapped him with her skillet that she was a-carrying from the kitchen all full of hot grease and fried chicken. And that box was a-bussin' and a-bussin'. And she said, come quick, tell you, because one of her outland mutes, she wrote, bad, bad, get help quick, in the grease.
It's a bomb. The key's turning on.
Like a light? A switch?
Yes. If they're the bombs taken from us, it takes at least 2 keys to arm them. So no one can do it by accident. The keys have to be used in the right order.
Prima turned to the woman.
Where are the keys?
I don't know, ma'am. She only told me to come tell you because you'd sent word we used to get out and range to Travis's brother. He said no, we was all horse of Satan and deserved to die anyway.
I'll send...
Prima held up her hand.
They won't trust you. They might trust my women. You want to be sure no one uses both keys?
Any keys, if we're not too late.
Prima dispatched another cluster of women, who followed the first back across the street. The next armored transport arrived. 1 baby left, then 6 toddlers, and women to care for them, crammed into that one. Baron noticed that Prima had no hesitation about which to choose, and those waiting their turn made no attempt to crowd or protest. 1 more would make a shuttle load, the shuttle they'd come in on. 2 sets of keys, he was sure, almost sure, hadn't been used. At least 3 more, and he would be lucky if that was all. A gust of acrid smoke blew past.
Something just blew in that pretty little park up the block from you, Ensign. Looks like it took the top off that decorative star.
Baron looked out to see, through the cloud of dust and smoke, an ominous shape rising slowly from the bright red and yellow flower beds.
I think we found the nukes.
The even tone of his voice surprised him.
They had a silo under that thing, and somebody used both keys.
For all the good it would do, he gestured to Prima to have everyone get down on the floor, and then replaced and locked his own helmet.
Would have been nice to have said goodbye to Esme, but...
It's not moving anymore. What's your visual on it, Serrano?
Baron peered cautiously around the doorframe, wondering only then why he'd left the door open.
It's about 30 feet above ground and not moving.
Our birds would be out and flying by now. Is this just a way to blow up the city?
Pleasant thought.
He had not thought of that, and hoped very much that hypothesis was wrong.
Shuttles incoming.
The ground shook as the incoming shuttles dropped V upon entering the atmosphere. The first armored transport, back for another load, ground its way around the corner as if nothing else mattered and paused by the door. Baron shrugged. If that thing blew where it was, it wouldn't matter whether people were in the house or the transport. They'd be safely dead. He nodded at Prima, who pointed at heads until the transport driver insisted not one more would fit in. Of course, if it blew as the shuttles were landing, all those would die too. His decision to save more lives just might be the cause of losing more lives.
Oh well, I asked for command track.
Troop drop!
Baron peeked out again to see the first shuttle doing a low flyby, its drop bay open and Marines falling, then steadying on their grav pads to form up with the others. A blinding bright bar of blue light stabbed across toward the north. A second shuttle, this one fatter and even slower, crawled past with its cargo bay open and disgorging dark blots he hoped were more weapons and some faster transport.
Equipment!
On grav sleds, big enough to hold 20 armored troops, steering carefully down to the wide streets around the central plaza. Once they had gone to open green rules, attempts to match technology to that of the planet had gone by the boards. A column of black smoke. Baron could almost feel sympathy for the men with their rifles and their long knives. A grab sled settled outside the door, and its six occupants rolled off, leaving room for the women and children. Prima had them ready and sent them out the door without a word.
First shuttle's off.
So the original mission was accomplished, if they got those safely to a ship. The grav sled took off with a whirl of dust. The next settled in its place, and Prima directed a file out to it.
We're loading in all the streets.
Baron could see from the door the sleds landing and taking off in three of the streets around the plaza. He glanced around and saw that one more sled load would do it for this house.
It's your turn, Prima.
She's not going. She deserves to die, the murdering whore.
The scrawny man, the one he had not liked but had ignored after the first glance, had his long knife out and held to Prima's neck. Her eyes looked at him, a look that might have been warning, but was not fear. Then the neuro-enhanced female Marine who'd been checking the back rooms broke his arm like a soda straw, smashed him into the wall, and caught Prima before she fell. Her neck bled, but not the lethal spurt of a severed artery. The Marine slapped a field dressing on it. Prima looked at Baron, then quickly lowered her eyes.
You're a good protector.
No, she is.
Baron nodded to the Marine, who pushed up her faceplate so that Prima could see. Prima stared.
You're... a woman?
Yep, and a mother, too. Hang in there, lady. You're gonna be fine.
The last load went quickly. Baron swung aboard the grab sled and watched others loading and taking off as they swung above the city and headed for the spaceport. There he found, instead of the chaos he expected, a perfectly ordinary landing force traffic control section.
Ah, Ensign Serrano's last load. Fine. Bay 23, that'll finish the shuttle load.
Bay 23 had a shuttle labeled RSS Shrike. Baron helped his passengers from the grav sled to the interior with its narrow benches designed for troops in armor, not civilians in dresses. He started helping them strap in, ignoring the pounding of his heart, which had speeded up at the thought of seeing Esme again.
Baron!
His heart stopped completely, then raced on again. She was there, alive and well, waving from the front. He nodded, grinning but speechless with feeling, and went on with his work. Prima placed a hand on his wrist.
You know her?
Yes, she's...
He didn't even know what words would make it clear to her what his culture meant by engagement. Prima's eyes flicked to his face, then back down.
I will be an obedient second wife after you execute my husband Mitchell.
Baron could think of nothing whatever to say to that. Far below, as the last shuttles rose into the sky, the men at last made it to the Rangers' houses, the armory, the meeting hall. The houses were empty, but for a dead man or two in each, and the keys they needed so badly, were missing. Mitchell Pardue had been told that his wives and children were safe, but he hadn't believed it. Not until Prima stood before him, properly barefoot but quite improperly dressed in a bright orange ship suit with a sheet tied around it for a skirt. She glanced at his face, then down respectfully.
We have a new protector of the Serrano family.
Prima, you can't just...
Prima looked at him again, this time steadily.
I reckon you lied to me, husband. You said they was all orphans. You said those Outlander women was all you ever found. You never told me you killed parents in front of their children. That you killed women, even mothers. As far as I'm concerned, they might as well mute you, Mitchell Pardue, because if your tongue cannot speak the truth, why speak at all?
And after that, he found he had little need to speak and no one to speak to. In a last act of kindness that tore his heart, his captor showed him video of his children playing in the ship's gymnasium. They were almost to the security station at the fleet entrance to Rockhouse Major when they spotted the crowds on the other side of the barrier. The security detail moved on ahead to take up their positions.
Oh, Lord, the media.
You knew it would be here.
I suppose so, but I could hope. And you know I used to love being the top newsflash attraction.
Well, Baron could almost top you this time.
I do not really have 19 wives.
No. But do you think the media cares? It's a great story.
As may.
I wouldn't tease him. After all, you could be a sensation yourself.
Not me. I'm the plain one.
Oh, I don't think so. Land bride Sweeza, in love with a man encumbered by 19 fanatic cultists, and having gone from villainess of my abduction to hero of the rescue force? We might as well face it. We're all condemned to a spot on the evening news.
So, what's your advice, oh experienced target of the press?
Relax and enjoy it. In fact, let's give them a real show. After all, it's ours. We're the heroes of the hour. Let's do it right.
I hesitate to ask, Esme, do you know what she means?
No, I don't, but I think we're about to find out.
Link arms with me, you two.
We can't do that. We're sober, serious professionals. Fleet officers.
But Brun had already grabbed her arm, and they came out of the gate like a trio of chorus dancers into the lights and hubbub.
All we have to worry about is pirates, thieves, traitors, smugglers, assassins, and the occasional nutcase.
Esme looked past Brun to Baron.
Do you want to duck her in the fountain, or shall I?
Let's do it together.
Always.
The Serrano Legacy, Rules of Engagement, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1998, Elizabeth Moon. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Elizabeth Demery, M.B. Van Dorn, Corey James, Peter Stray, Sonny Lasky, Sherry Simpson, Lily Beacon, Stephen Carpenter, Michael John Casey, Elizabeth Jernigan, Michael Glenn, Thomas Penny, Jeff Baker, Karen Carbone, Colleen Delaney, Tim Getman, James Lewis, David Coyne, James Konacek, Tom Simpson, Mort Shelby, Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Ken Jackson, Kate Foster, and Chris Rowan. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. Book adapted for graphic audio by Wilson T. Ferrier. If you enjoyed The Serrano Legacy, be sure to look for Rogue Angel, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.